What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Now, Rick having some connection issues, so he will be on with us in just a moment. But we wait for no one as Chris and I are ready to start you on your Monday morning. Good morning, Chris Canty. How are you?
I'm doing well, Dave. I hope you're doing well also. But quick question. I thought Rick was supposed to be an IT guru now. What happened with that?
Yeah, well, remember, he was the IT guru, and then he said he's not involved at all in IT. So I'm not sure he knows what he wants, which sounds like typical Rick. And apparently whatever issues he's having, he can't connect. He can't fix them if, in fact, he is the IT guru that he claims to be.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be hacking anybody's computer anytime soon. But I'm doing good today, Dave. I had an awesome holiday weekend. Did a little bit of everything. I went fishing with Dad, and all we really caught was the breeze. And my dad said that the fish were social distancing, so we'll see how that works out moving forward. But I got on the grill, took a dip in the pool, shot some fireworks off the dock on Saturday with my neighbors. That was pretty cool. So it was pretty awesome.
So you did it all this weekend. Was there any golfing this weekend?
There was some golf Saturday morning. We had a 7:30 tee time to beat the heat, but we did play some golf. Although I don't know if you could call what my dad and I did golfing the way that we played.
So you golfed, you fished, you swam, you barbecued, you lit off some fireworks safely, I imagine. You had a pretty good weekend.
It was an awesome weekend, Dave. How was yours?
It was good. I saw the two sides of like social distancing and how people react. So we went to two barbecues this weekend. One on Saturday, very small crowds, one on Saturday. And it got to the point, Chris, where the person, I tried to separate my seat and somebody just kept moving their seat closer to mine to where I finally had to say, excuse me, can we keep a 6-foot distance here? I was like, oh, okay, I didn't know you were doing that thing. And I was like, yes, I'm doing that thing. Doing that thing. And then I went to one last night where the people we went to literally would not get within 20 feet of us and were wearing masks. So I saw both ends of the spectrum. But yes, a lot of eating, a lot of grilling, a lot of barbecuing, eventually a lot of social distancing, but a very nice weekend. But you saw both ends of the spectrum this week, Chris, I tell you.
Yeah, we got it all covered. Now, when you were at the first barbecue, after you were eating, did you put on a mask or you just decided to stay 6 feet away?
I feel, and I don't know if this is right, Rick's going to join us in a second. I feel like when I'm more than 6 feet away that I can go without a mask. But when I'm within that 6-foot barrier that the mask needs to be on. So I kept saying, and I'm telling you, it was unbelievable. We said good morning to Rick. Rick, I'm at a barbecue with about 8 people and there's a huge backyard. And the one guy just continued to scooch his chair next to mine over and over and over all night to when I finally had to say, excuse me, can we please keep 6 feet between us?
Habitual line stepper. I mean, you got to watch out for that guy.
Oh.
Probably a Patriots fan.
That's what they're dealing with in baseball, though, too, Dave. I mean, I've heard a couple different stories where, depending on the guy, I mean, there are some guys that will social distance. I was just listening to, you know, the opposite ends of the spectrum, the one guy that wanted to sit close to you and the other ones that wouldn't go near you. It's the same thing in Major League Baseball. Depending on where you're from, there are some guys that are doing all the right things, wearing the mask, social distancing, and the other guys looking at them going, what are you guys doing? Why are you guys taking this thing so serious?
So serious. I don't understand. I cannot comprehend, Rick, why there are people out there that think, why are you taking this thing so serious?
It's hard to comprehend. And maybe that's just, I mean, again, it depends on where you're from, what state you live in. I mean, we're in the epicenter of this thing. I mean, we experienced this firsthand. When you turn on the news and you see, you know, people being taken out in body bags because there's no place to put them, I mean, that's a stark reality how serious this thing is, as opposed to some of these states that, you know, it's business as usual. Like, there's nothing going on around you. So, I listen, I don't know how it's possible, but, I mean, the reality is that's what this country is dealing with right now.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. So before we get to baseball, we will, and the Yankees and Tanaka, and there's a statement from the Nationals I'll read in just a moment. How was your weekend, Rick?
Weekend was all right. I didn't do any barbecues. We stayed up. Obviously, you know my wife. We stayed home. Did some steak. Bonsai the kids' faces off yesterday. Got this blow-up, like, slide-slash-water-park situation, which turned into, like, a UFC event because, you know, Milo can't control himself, so we had bloody noses. We had, you know, fat lips. A bit of a mess. But I mean, all in all, okay. Weather was good. No complaints.
All right. Very nice.
Except for, oh, by the way, too. Oh, again.
What?
So I get an email, okay? A no fireworks email, which I laughed at. I'm like, okay, people are going to have fireworks, which is fine.
You get an email from who? Like the town?
The village. Yeah, the village sends an email. Like, we would prefer you not, you know, set off fireworks. Which I'm like, people are going to set off fireworks, no big deal. I have no problem with fireworks. Except that now you take it to the next level where at 1 o'clock in the morning, you're just, that's when, you know, we're going to do the grand finale at 1 a.m. And it's bang, bang, bang. And of course, I mean, wakes the kids up. I mean, we can't get the finale done by like, you know, 10-ish. We got to wait till 1 a.m.
What's the difference for you between 10 and 1 anyway?
Well, there is no difference. I mean, I'm well into my sleep. It's the kids that I'm worried about. I mean, because now the kids are up. So the kids are in our room because they're all nervous. They're upset. So it's a fiasco. It's a debacle, Dave.
Yeah. Well, been a lot of fireworks lately, that's for sure. A
lot of fireworks.
Yeah.
This 2020, man. Yeah. I mean,
we're halfway through.
No, I mean, it's just not. It's not going fast enough.
No, we gotta get through this thing. It's winning, Uncle. Right. All right. So let's get into the Yankees, Chris. I can only imagine what you were like upon seeing the video of Tanaka getting plunked in the head off the line drive of Giancarlo Stanton. You must have had a heart attack.
Yeah, I mean, that's scary stuff, Dave. I mean, first of all, your thoughts with players just to make sure that he's healthy. You don't even think about the implications for your team. You just wonder about Masahiro Tanaka's health. But it seems like everything checked out at the hospital on Saturday, and they had him listed as being in the concussion protocol, and they'll monitor him, but they expect that he'll be back sooner rather than later. But, I mean, you heard about the reaction from all of the Yankees players, Giancarlo Stanton included. Like, as soon as he hit that line drive, which was, what, 112 miles an hour off the bat?
Terrifying.
As soon as he hit it, like, he crouched down because, you know, he knew exactly what had happened, and he'd already lived that movie when he played for the Marlins, and he was hit by Mike Fiers. So it's a scary scene, and that's one of those things that when you jump straight into those live competition simulated games and you don't have the protection of an L screen – something like that can happen just because a player doesn't necessarily have his bearings about him. He doesn't react quick enough to be able to defend himself. And it feels like that's the situation that played out over this weekend with Tanaka. So you just hope that he gets better. You saw the other pitchers, James Paxton and Jordan Montgomery, take the precautions and have the L screen there with their workouts throughout the weekend. But that's one of those things that you worried about, especially when you try to get things ramped up in a short period of time, because you're talking about the regular season being, what, 2 weeks from now kicking off? So it's one of those scary things. You hope that this doesn't happen. The odds say that it probably won't happen again to any of their other pitchers. But it's just a really scary scene, Dave.
Can I ask a silly question? I don't know if you guys – I've seen the video, I mean, about 100 times.
Yeah.
Was it – I the only one that thought it was weird that the first reaction was to go down on your knees in the batter's box and no one ran out to knock on the mound immediately?
Yeah. Yeah.
It just seemed weird to me. If I had a screaming line drive off my pitcher's head, my first reaction would probably be to run and make sure he's okay.
Well, he was just so upset because he's as Chris mentioned, he's the guy that gets it the most. But it was strange that I don't know who the catcher even was. But the
it looked
catcher
like Higashioka.
He just kind of wandered around the batter's box for a few seconds. Like, I saw a good portion of the video. No one even approached Tanaka after that happened.
I wonder if that's like just because everyone's kind of like in a weird spot with social distancing and everything else.
And I think it's also shocking. Like, that kind of thing just terrifying and shocking. You almost, you know, it's almost like a car accident. You don't exactly know how to react after something like that has happened.
Exactly.
No, I agree with you. I just thought it was weird. I mean, my initial reaction would be like, just go make sure he's okay. I mean, that's a screaming line drive off his head. But I mean,
he's
just
lucky though, man. I mean,
if
that hits him in the face.
In the temple. Yeah.
Oh.
It's a different story.
I mean, 112 miles an hour. That is terrifying. Do you remember it was in Fenway Park?
Yeah, the Boston pitcher?
I think it was Bryce Flory. Ryan Thompson hit the line drive. I think he had multiple surgeries. He was bloodied and battered and broken. It was one of the worst things I've ever seen. I mean, it's unbelievably dangerous, the line drive back to the pitcher.
Yeah, the line drive. I mean, you barely have any time to react.
Well, you have no time to react.
None. And, of course, I mean, just with the way the world is going right now, of course that happens. You know, you're a couple days into summer camp, and that's the first thing, you know what I mean? You got Masahiro Tanaka taking a line drive off the head. But, I mean, just in general, I mean, outside of that, baseball, I mean, right now is a hot mess, man.
It almost feels like it couldn't be worse.
Doesn't feel like it. Did you see this? Have you seen the statement from Mike Rizzo?
Yeah, I was going to get into that in a second. Yeah.
I mean, what are we doing? You spend all this time arguing over money. You figure you'd have the safety protocol somewhat ironed out, but apparently they don't. This is a mess.
It is a mess. And now Mike Trout, and I don't blame him, but Mike Trout says he's not sure what he's going to do. I mean, if you start to get the likes of Mike Trout and big players like that, the whole season loses its feel, at least for me. And I'm not saying I blame him for potentially not playing, but it changes the complexion of the season in my mind.
No, it certainly does, Dave, because there is no bigger name in the sport than Mike Trout. I mean, he's the best player in baseball. He's an all-time great generational talent. But I guess when you start talking about being able to pull off this season and execute, you know, the safety protocols and the preventative measures to keep guys as safe as possible. I mean, when you have guys reporting to camp and they still don't have the results of their in-tech testing several days later, that's a problem. Like what we saw with Sean Doolittle in the Washington Nationals, like that's a problem when he says that he did the intake testing and days later he still doesn't have the results. It's hard for players to have confidence that you're doing everything that's necessary in order to keep them safe. And so when you start having things like that happen, it chips away at the credibility of all the measures that you put in place. And again, it sounds like from a lot of the guys that are in camps right now that they're on the fence about it. And if you have a few things go wrong, then I think you'll see a lot of guys decide to opt out. I mean, we saw Felix Hernandez and David Price decide to opt out this weekend, didn't we?
Yep.
So, I mean, I don't think that those will be the last guys based on how things have gone on early. Now, with any kind of new wrinkle, any type of new innovation, implementation of that at the beginning is going to be tough, right? Because it's new. So you think that there will be a few kinks, but with something like COVID-19, when it comes to the health and safety of the players, I just feel like this is one of those things that you had to have down cold before you even started to allow players to come back to ballparks. And clearly, that's not where MLB was in terms of making sure that all of that stuff was buttoned up.
Well, you talk about that. Here's the statement, Rick. You mentioned the Nationals. This is from their GM, Mike Rizzo. Per MLB's protocol, all players and staff were tested for COVID-19 Friday, July 3rd. 72 hours later, we still have yet, this is amazing to me, still have yet to receive the results of those tests. We cannot have our players and staff working at risk. Therefore, we've canceled our team workout scheduled for this morning. We will not sacrifice the health and safety of our players, staff, and their families without accurate and timely testing. It is simply not safe for us to continue with summer camp. Major League Baseball needs to work quickly to resolve issues with their process and their lab. Otherwise, summer camp and the 2020 season are at risk. How can you not have this streamlined, where you take the test and within 24 hours you have the answer?
Well, that's the question too. And yeah, Sean Doolittle, I mean, doesn't know what his test is. I mean, he gets tested on a Friday. He's allowed to, you know, work out and everything else, not even knowing if he's negative or positive, and then gets another test on Sunday and still doesn't have his results from Friday. And then, I mean, you have testers not even show up. You got the players actually giving themselves saliva tests and sending them out to the lab, which you have a partner. And that was the one selling point I thought, you know, headed into this, was they have that partnership with the lab that does their PED testing. So it seemed like they would be able to, you know what I mean, as far as, you know, how many tests were available for the public and everything else, they actually had their own lab, which would make this, I guess, in theory, be a more seamless process than it is.
You thought so?
Well, you thought so. I mean, just look at, I mean, when you listen to Malika Andrews, who's down in the bubble in the NBA, and the amount of testing that she's doing, and the quarantine and everything else, when you see the, I mean, if you get a chance, and we'll talk about this today, I mean, the list of guidelines and protocols for the NHL when they get into their bubble, and how the testing is going to work and everything else. And then you see what's going on with Major League Baseball. It's especially when it's not a bubble situation. You got guys golfing. You know, I'm watching the Booms this morning. He runs an assessment as golfing over the weekend. I mean, it doesn't give you much optimism. It does not leave me with much optimism that this is going to work with Major League Baseball.
Yeah. Well, think about it. You've got to trust what? You're talking about trusting 600 guys to do the right thing? Well over 600.
Yeah, if not more, right? What are we looking at, 30 players for 30 teams? So you're looking at 900, really?
Yeah, exactly. Well over 600 guys. Well, they're going to cut down rosters to 26, a few weeks in? So, I mean, you're talking about trusting a lot of guys to do the right thing, and that's, I mean, we know that that's a tough ask. I mean, you're going to have varying opinions on it. I mean, we can't even get everybody to agree on a consensus on whether or not they should wear a mask in public. Like that's where the country is. So, I mean, it's not a surprise that you're going to have some of those same differences of opinion in baseball in terms of players and what they feel like they need to do in order to keep themselves safe and their teammates safe. So this is going to be one of those things that is going to come down to the decision of the individual. But when you're as big as baseball is, and you recognize the implications of, you know, positive tests and how that could be transmitted, you know, throughout teams and throughout your league, you know, one of the things that you've got to make sure that you've got done and ready to go is your testing. And it's clear that's not the case. And I don't understand how they could find themselves in this kind of place months later after they recognize the challenges that will be ahead for them if they were to decide to move forward with the 2020 season.
That's
inexcusable.
Well, here's the thing, though, too, Chris and Dave. It's not only one team. I mean, you have the Nationals, and they're shutting it down because they don't have their results. You got the A's, who their tests are stuck in San Francisco. They're still waiting for the results of their tests, or actually to get the test to the lab. You have the Angels, who had to test themselves because their testers didn't show up. And apparently Ken Rosenthal is saying it's not just the Angels. It's two other identified teams, too, where the testers did not show up. So, I mean, what are we doing here?
No, it's embarrassing, to be honest.
They're not doing anything. That's the problem. Yeah.
But how are you supposed to be a major league player and have some semblance of intelligence and see the disaster that the testing is undergoing right now and feel, you know what, I'm in safe hands. I'm fine. I feel comfortable playing baseball right now.
No, you can't. More importantly, I mean, that for me would be the biggest fear with all these sports, is that either it's a false negative or, you know, the person just got it, and then it's not showing up on the test for 2 days, and that guy is just walking around the locker room, and that's how it's going to go like wildfire through a locker room. I mean, that's what this thing is setting up to be right now. I mean, the fact that Sean Doolittle gets tested on a Friday, is allowed to work out, and still doesn't have the results, that's exactly how you wipe out an entire team. And we're, what, 2 weeks away from the season starting?
Yeah. Today's, what, the 6th? And we're talking about starting on the 23rd, so 2.5 weeks away.
So what happens if one of these teams just gets wiped out a week from now?
I don't know.
I don't have an answer, Rick. Which is why they allowed, you know, for teams to have the 60-man roster report to summer training to get ready for this thing, just because you don't know who's going to be available and who's not going to be available due to the virus. Like, you have no idea.
It's just such a bad look.
But,
I mean, it really is.
But,
no, don't you think it's a bad look?
It's a terrible look. I mean, you spend months and months arguing over money with the players when you should have been more concerned with the health and safety protocols. And I guess you can put it on the owners, you can put it on the players. Both have a part to play in making sure that this process was as streamlined as it possibly could be, because from the outset of this, we talked about the need for rapid, reliable testing. When you're talking about not getting your results from 48 to 72 hours, that's not rapid. That's not, you know, you have to be able to respond quickly, because if you do have somebody that has it on the team, you got to do your best to isolate that player so that individual doesn't transmit it to the rest of the team, the rest of the people participating in the startup. So to me, that's the part of it that baseball, I don't know how they could mess that up, because everybody's looking for it. I mean, there's a heightened sense of urgency in terms of making sure that you're not transmitting this virus to other people. Everybody in the country is looking forward to live team sports coming back. You knew you were going to be in the middle of this conversation when it comes to COVID-19. So to not have this part of it taken care of, it's egregious.
Well, I feel like with the other sports too, I mean, NHL, NBA going into the bubble. So you're doing all the testing now and everything else. You start training camp. So I mean, what you're trying to do is make sure the NBA, it's the next couple of days, are going to go down to Orlando. So you're going to see a bunch of positive tests. You know, those guys will be isolated and everything else. You're trying to make sure that when you get to the bubble with the testing protocols and everything else, everyone that gets into the bubble is negative.
Mm-hmm.
So the bubble is an actual bubble. Same thing with the NHL. I mean, the way they're handling this testing is that they don't have enough time to be fat-handed with the testing right now. If you're allowing guys to just walk around a clubhouse, I don't care how much social distancing you're doing, you don't have masks on the entire time, and they don't have their results back, I mean, that's... You're setting yourself up for failure. That's how you're going to wipe out an entire team.
Yep. And then what do you do?
There's not enough time. You only have 2 weeks. That's how long. If you wipe out a team, it's going to take at least 2 weeks to get the guys back.
Well, you don't have any margin for error, though, Rick, just because you're playing, what, 60 games in 66 days?
Yep.
So if you're talking about a team that's an organization that's not able to field a team at any point throughout the regular season, then, I mean, what does that do in terms of the integrity of that season? It's gone. It's completely gone.
Completely gone. So and on top of that, too, I mean, you got Freddie Freeman, who's one of the most – I mean, he's one of the best players in baseball.
Yep.
And you've heard his story. And that's got to scare the hell out of players.
You see what Brian Snitker said? He said, it's going to be a long time before we see him back in the Braves lineup.
Well, that's got to scare the hell out of you. I mean, outside of him, everyone seems to have dealt with it fine. But you're talking about a guy, well-conditioned athlete, great shape.
That's the thing, Rick. The one outlier. If 100 guys get it, 99 are fine, and you have one guy who gets really sick, and God forbid, you know, the unthinkable happens, then what happens? That's the terrifying thought.
But Dave, they're only making it worse because all of a sudden you see what Freddie Freeman is dealing with, right? His wife says he's never sick, and this thing has just completely shut him down. So, okay, antennas are up. If it can happen to him, it can happen to me. And on top of it now, you don't trust the testing that they're keeping you safe? I mean, if you're a baseball player, you're saying, well, I mean, is this worth this? Because I could be Freddie Freeman. God forbid I'm Freddie Freeman, or worse. And I don't trust the testing protocols that there's guys that my teammates aren't walking around, you know, with it. And we don't know because we can't get the first of all, we can't get testers to show up. And second of all, we can't get the results back.
Right. I mean, three days later.
Those seem like two things that should be controllable for major league clubs. Like, that should be something that you can take care of. That shouldn't be something that's overly complicated. That's what I can't understand. Why is that not in place? It's not like you didn't know that this was coming at some point. You had time to prepare for this.
Could you imagine, though? Just think about this, Chris. Could you imagine you spent this whole time arguing about money, right? We want full prorated. We're taking on all the risk and everything else. Finally, you get to the 60 games. You're not happy about it. You show up, and you're the Los Angeles Angels. And you're like, okay, ready for the testing? Guys, kind of a problem. A little bit. There's no testers here, so we're going to have to do – you guys are going to have to test yourselves.
But that just goes to show you, man. Owners are not – they don't care about the health and safety of the players. And I'm not just saying baseball owners. I mean sports owners in general. They do not care about the well-being of the athletes. They care about what's in the best interest of the bottom line and making sure that they control the narrative when it comes to public perception around how they feel about the players. But they don't really care about the players, because if you did, that would be something that's already in place.
Of course. This is embarrassing for baseball. And I will say this. I can't imagine a worse five-day start to what we have to the season than what we've had from July 1 till today.
Well, Dave, it goes back to what Buster Olney was saying last week, right? I mean, a lot of executives around baseball feel like it's an exercise in futility. Like it's fake hustle. They might start it, but they're not actually going to be able to finish it. I mean, doesn't it feel like we're going down that road?
It sure does. And you say they may start it. I mean, do you feel like they may start it now? It doesn't feel like that to me. And we still have 2.5 weeks to go until we start the season.
Well, I'm still choosing to be optimistic, Dave, even though I've been really the pessimist throughout this whole process. I still want to be optimistic just because I want to see baseball.
Of course we do.
Like, I'm excited to watch Yankees practice on Yes Tonight at 6 p.m. Like, why am I excited about a practice where J-Hap and Clark Schmidt are pitching in a simulated game?
Because you haven't watched sports in 4 months.
But exactly. But I want it, Dave.
Yeah.
As ugly as everything that has been happening around baseball the last couple of months has been, I want to watch it. So I want to be optimistic about them being able to pull it off. And I do recognize there's a little bit of a curve when it comes to trying to implement any new process. But, I mean, this is just one of those things that baseball should have made sure was in place when their players were ready to return. And the fact that they dropped the ball on this one, I can't understand that. I can't wrap my mind around that.
All right, let's get to some of the callers. 800-919-3776. We'll do hockey, that hockey thing at 11 o'clock with Greg Wyshynski. It's not so easy to say.
Yes. Of the whole name, of that entire name, Greg would not have been the part of that name I think you would have struggled with.
Anyway, he'll join us at 11 o'clock this morning. Andy from Merrick will join us at 10:53 to give us his trivia of the day. 11:30 CMT, 12:30 in observation. So a lot going on. Let's go to Spike in Jersey. Got that right. Spike, you're first up on 98.7.
Again, and I hope your fellas, my friends, had a wonderful weekend. It sounds very refreshed. I'm going to give you some perspective. I have the Center for Disease Control 24/7 on my computer and phone. And you guys can all relate to this. So we were a kid. I was a kid a long time ago. I couldn't wait to crack open the paper and see the box score. Well, this is the reverse. So I crack open the thing at the front of the album up in the morning. You and Kirsten Rick, and I look at it, and I see 52,200 new cases. The deaths are going down. The youngsters are getting it. My point with all this is no one knows what the hell they're doing. This is what I'm surmising. And like Chris said, he's been pessimistic. I think I'd be more realist. I think they should have waited. We know it's all bottom line. Until the end of this year, I know money makes the train run. But let's get everything cleared up. I can't say what I want to say. You'll knock me off the radio, the word I want to use. But it's so poorly done. When you see Trout and the other, what's his name, the pitcher, the other guy, all these name players, what's the difference if it's a name player or if it's some scrub if they get sick and succumb to this? Does it really make a difference?
No, it doesn't.
Understand.
No. It's only going to take one. It's only going to take one player to end up on a ventilator for it to just have to shut down because the players will say, we can't trust the process and we don't want to be that guy.
Well, you said it before, Rick. The testing, this is one of the greatest country in the world medically wise, and you've got to wait for a test. First, there was a saliva test. Everyone's in this rush to get the sports back on when there are other issues in this country. I'm not going down that road. They're all important. Every issue is important. But this is, I can't believe how poorly handled this is. We're trying to get down and move to Florida. And I can't even go down there because I have to, you get quarantined and asymptomatic cases. You don't even know if someone has it. And there's so many false negatives. I'm just, I love you guys and love the station and love to talk sports, but I'm so confused now and I'm so embarrassed that the medical community has no freaking idea of what they're doing or conspiracy theory. It's worse than we know and they're not telling us. That's what I'm hoping I'm wrong. So let's get back on the right track and have a couple of laughs today. And again, just hang in there. I don't know what to do. Maybe you can
help Spike, me out. I mean, listen, man, and we appreciate the phone call. We all feel the exact same way. Right? I mean, we want sports, but it's very strange, and it feels very uncomfortable. And I understand the line of thinking, Chris, of, let's just wait until this thing is over. But we don't know when that's going to be. We don't know when this thing is going to be over.
We have no idea when it's going to be over, Dave. But I think that when you start to listen to some of the medical experts and their optimism around when there can be more treatments on the marketplace or, fingers crossed, a vaccine on the marketplace. I think that if you try to give yourself as much time to allow that to be the case, then I think that, you feel better about returning to live team sports. Again, nobody has a crystal ball. We don't know when those things are going to happen. So you're trying to figure out a path forward. But I guess everybody would agree that a path forward would have to involve being able to have rapid, reliable testing, and to not have that in place as you're trying to get to this ramp up to the beginning of the regular season. I just think that's the part of it that doesn't make sense to me if you're Major League Baseball. How could you not have this critical piece of it nailed down before you start allowing players to return to facilities?
See, that's what's amazing to me. I know we have people call in and we start talking about money and everything else. You have someone call in and say, for that much money, I would do any. And it's not apples to apples, right? I mean, the expectation is these are professional athletes. This is, these are, billion-dollar corporations. Like, they're going to get different treatment than everyone else. They're going to have the best of the best, tests available. Like, whatever they need, they'll have. And then, all of a sudden, we're in a situation with Major League Baseball where you have to realize going in, there's going to be some trepidation from the players anyway, right? They're a little bit nervous, hesitant, who knows what's going on. And then to have this all of a sudden, this is how you roll it out to the players? Yeah. This is how you introduce it
right.
to the players?
You think it would be buttoned up more than anything's ever been buttoned up before in the history of medical testing?
At least to start. At least to start. And then, as you kind of get, get your bearings, maybe it's not as intense. But from the beginning, you would imagine it's going to be, every single thing that needed to be done would be done from the get-go just to make the players feel safe. And to have it like this, we have multiple teams, it's embarrassing.
It's awful.
I don't understand how that happens, especially after you spend all this time arguing over money. You finally get, I don't even want to call it an agreement. You finally just come to terms where they're going to be a season, and this is how you're going to start. It's brutal.
It doesn't feel like there's anything that Major League Baseball can do to restore the confidence of the players that they're doing everything that they can to keep them safe. Like once you have something like this happen at the beginning of it, it's just like, okay, I don't know that there's anything that can be done where the players would say, oh, you know what, now I feel a lot safer. Just because of how they allowed the guys to come back to the facilities and not having the results of all the players that were participating in practices over the weekend. Like, that's the part of it that I don't know that you can ever make the players feel good about. And so does that lead to more guys opting out, more of the guys that the fans actually want to see? I would probably say probably, Dave. I would lean toward probably.
Yeah. Look, you have the biggest name in all of baseball who says he's just not sure what he's going to do. I understand the Yankee fans laugh at David Price, but David Price is a big-name pitcher and a top two or three starter on maybe the best team in baseball. He's now done. I mean, this is not the 25th guy on the roster, guys. These are big-name players that are either not playing or considering not playing.
Yeah, but here's the point, though, Dave, is that Major League Baseball, and we said this the entire time. We had Buster on. It didn't matter who we had on. In order to make this work, it was going to have to be a collaboration between the players and the teams. Major League Baseball had to recognize that going in, that there were going to be plenty of players that were nervous about this, that didn't want to risk their long-term. Like, again, because it goes back to we don't have enough answers to these questions. So there was going to be hesitancy to begin with, and it was your job to make sure you make them feel comfortable that you're doing everything in your power to keep them healthy, keep them safe. And that's the opposite of what you've done so far.
But you know what, Rick? You said something at the beginning of this. You said when Tony Clark came out and responded to the owners talking about money, that was the worst mistake the MLBPA could have made. And you were talking about just what happens in the court of public opinion and perception of where the players are at. But the reality is the players should have been more concerned about the health and safety protocols and how they were going to be implemented. Because if you did have more concern about this, then the situation that we saw play out over the course of the weekend with several clubs would not be the case. That would not have happened. It was clear to me that both sides were too focused on money and not paying enough attention to what got everybody into this mess, which is the actual coronavirus. That was the real enemy. And yet they chose serial toward one another. You're right. They didn't collaborate. They didn't work together. And that's what opens the door to something like this happening. And we just hope that it doesn't lead to something that could be much, much worse.
It's a bad start. It's a real, real bad start. 800-919-3776. We'll get to your calls. You know what we got coming up. We got Andy from Merrick with his trivia later this hour. We've got Greg Wyshynski, beautifully said, at the top of the 11 o'clock hour.
Dave, you know what?
What?
Before we go to break, you know what happens, though, is you're only confirming what the players thought. By having this be so, such a mess, you're only confirming. Like Chris just said it. I mean, and that's someone that's not even, a part of Major League Baseball, one of these players, is you get down there. If you're on the Angels right now and you got me, I'm saliva testing myself, you're probably going to yourself, they could care less about our safety.
But did you ever, I never thought they really did.
No, I didn't. No, I think we all realize that, but at least fake it. At least at the beginning, fake it. Like, at least pretend like you're worried about us. And then to have a turnout like this, where you got multiple teams where the testers don't show up. I mean, 72 hours, you got no results yet.
It's awful. There's nothing more to say. This is the worst start you could possibly have if you're a Major League Baseball. Can we bring him in? Greg Wyshynski covers the NHL for us so well at ESPN.com. Greg, we welcome you aboard. How are you?
Doing well. Busy times. The NHL, this is the second time the NHL has done this, where they dropped a huge document on Memorial Day for us to write about and then decided to announce everything in the world over July 4th weekend. So absolutely no respect for...
Yeah, they want to keep you busy. So let's start out there. What's the latest for everyone to hear of where we are with the return? The start of, I guess, training camp, the start of the season, the locations. Give us the latest on hockey.
Well, here we go. So what's happened is right now the National Hockey League Players Association is in the next few days, hopefully, going to be voting on both the return to play documents that were leaked yesterday. We wrote about them on ESPN this morning. And then also on a new collective bargaining agreement, which is a real key to this entire thing happening. Now, to break it down as far as what's going to happen if everything's approved, phase three for the NHL's training camp that should begin around July 13th, around about that time. That'll go on for a few weeks. Teams will then transition to two hub cities for phase four, and those cities are going to be Toronto for the Eastern Conference and Edmonton for the Western Conference. As you guys know, Las Vegas was the leading site for the Western Conference for a very long time. The COVID-19 numbers there spiked. Edmonton's been in really good shape for months. And so, you know, Western Conference players have to wrap their brains around going to Edmonton instead of Vegas for 3 months. But what can you do? And we go full speed ahead. I mean, testing protocols, the whole thing. The NHL is ramping back up to finish the season this summer.
Greg, let me ask you a question. Why? So reading through some of these protocols and everything else, first I'll actually ask you this. From the people that you talk to, is it a foregone conclusion that the CBA extension and the different phases are going to be ratified by both sides?
The return to play stuff is pretty much done. You know, they just need the formality of the player vote. I think the fact that the NHL and the PA have come up with a way for players to opt out if they don't feel like they want to do this and there's no penalties to them or anything else, then that's a good thing. And the expectation is that there will be some players for, you know, for their own health, for the consideration of the health of their families or family members, may not decide to do this summer. So that remains to be seen. The CBA stuff, as you know, is always a bit more dicey. Mm-hmm. But it does sound like that they've done some good work on some of the things that the players were most interested in seeing get fixed, i.e. going back to the Olympics for at least the next two Winter Games, and then also figuring out a solution for escrow, which is the percentage that's withheld from a player's contract during the season to ensure a 50-50 revenue split with the owners. It's a complicated thing, but bottom line is that even though it's not been abolished, which is what a lot of players wanted, they've put it down and capped it at certain numbers for the next 6 years. And this CBA, by the way, will be at least 6 years, maybe seven, depending on some other conditions. So it looks favorable as far as the players. You got to keep this in mind, though. Like, you know, the COVID shutdown just rattled everything that they were working on for the CBA. I mean, the players are going to end up owing the owners a lot of dough based on how much revenue they've lost this season. We'll probably lose next season. So, you know, this CBA is not only, I think, a document for the next couple of years beyond, you know, this pandemic, but also it's coming up with remedies to try to solve problems that they didn't even think were going to be problems back in January.
Greg, I'm reading through some of the details about the bubble that the NHL is going to create in the two cities, and it says a part of every 52-member traveling party, there will be a representative to serve as the club's compliance officer to make sure that they're in line with all the protocols that the NHL is putting in place. And I guess my question is, who's responsible for assigning the compliance officer? Because I could see a situation where it could be a conflict of interest if it's assigned by the team in terms of protecting the integrity of the bubble.
Your thought's probably my first thought, which is they'll just have an intern do it, right? But no, it ain't going to be like that. So it's going to be somebody who has in somewhere in their work history some experience with compliance, with checking boxes, with filling out these forms, with being the point person for a project like this, but obviously not exactly like this. The NHL is going to be the one that signs off on the identity of this person. Teams will sort of nominate them. The NHL will be like, okay, that's your person, and then we move forward. But your point's taken, man, and it speaks to a larger point that I think is one of the more head-scratching things about this bubble experiment, which is, can we trust these guys to be on the up and up when a positive test means someone will leave your lineup for 2 weeks? I mean, that's the bottom line. I mean, if they're asymptomatic, they can come back quicker. It's all spelled out in the document, you know, a 72-hour turnaround kind of thing if there's negative tests and what have you. So if you're asymptomatic, you can come back quicker. But if you've got symptoms, you test positive, not only are you done for like 2 weeks, but you aren't training during that period, and you have to come back only when it's signed off by a cardiologist and a team physician. So do we trust them to be on the up and up with the diagnosis? Do we trust them to be on the up and up with the numbers and the testing? You hope so. And I think the NHL is going to be very diligent in making sure that it happens. But this is also a sport where guys kind of come back and play with concussions and things like that. So it's not as if these teams in this league have necessarily earned our trust when it comes to their candor on medical conditions.
on the NHL. Greg Wyshynski joining us here, 98.7 ESPN. So, listen, baseball, Greg, has gotten off to seemingly a horrendous first 5 days of this summer training camp. And all of a sudden, some guys, Mike Trout has said he's not sure what he's going to do. David Price has said, I'm out. Felix Hernandez, Joe Ross, you know, Ryan Zimmerman are not going to play. And I have a feeling there's going to be more in the future for baseball. Do you have that feel at all for hockey, that there will be guys that say, you know what, I'm just not going to come back? Or do you think for the most part they believe in the plan and they will come back to hockey?
No, I think there's some guys that will opt out. I mean, you know, there's some guys that are older, that have underlying conditions and things of that nature, that might just not feel comfortable about doing this. I mean, one of the biggest issues for these guys, speaking to the players over the last couple of months, has been the time away from their families and being stuck in this bubble. I mean, you're in a hotel room by yourself. You're taking field trips with your boys to go golfing maybe once a week. But it's a lot of isolation, and it's a lot of isolation after, you know, a good four-month chunk where you're seeing your families every single day. Now, in some cases, guys might celebrate the idea of running away for a few months after being in that situation. But in most cases, these guys miss their families, miss their wives, miss their partners, and they're not going to see anybody in person until at least the conference finals. The conference finals and the Stanley Cup final are when the NHL says that spouses and partners and children and close family members can enter these bubbles and reconnect with the players, but they even have to then go through a quarantine process themselves. So it's not just simply like concerns for their health or concerns from health of older relatives or things like that. It's simply, do I want to put myself through this and put my family through this and you know, for what? To play in front of an empty building for 2 months.
Greg Wyshynski scored. Greg Wyshynski joins us here on the show. I know, right? It's bad karma. Greg, what went into making the decision to have Edmonton host the conference finals and the Stanley Cup finals instead of Toronto?
Good question. I think it might have to do with the COVID-19 numbers in Edmonton and just how Alberta as a whole has really had the pandemic on lock for months, and the numbers have been very favorable. You know, that was always what's been communicated to me from the NHL in trying to determine the hub cities. The only thing that they care about is the safety and security of the bubble they're creating. And so I think they feel that even though Toronto, you know, I think is the bigger media market, and then obviously they pulled off the World Cup of Hockey 4 years ago there, so they know they can obviously stage a pretty large event. They just feel that Edmonton in a new building with the numbers being what they are in the surrounding area, they're going to be able to secure this thing a little bit more easily than maybe in Toronto.
Greg, you mentioned earlier that guys around the league with underlying health conditions could potentially opt out of the restart. But what about how is the NHL going to handle guys that want to participate that do have underlying health conditions? I'm thinking about one New York Ranger in particular. But how is the NHL going to handle that with these guys being a part of the restart?
Yeah, and Max Domi, another player up in Montreal, has diabetes, I think it is, and you know, there's a lot of guys that might have something that we're not even privy to that could put them at risk for playing in this environment. What the NHL has said in this document that they've crafted together that was released to teams and players is that they're going to actually have some discretion where they might be able to tell guys you can't play, and that's going to be some controversy, and there might be some pushback from the union. But in particular, you know, obviously, like, they're thinking more along the lines of some severe illnesses they may be suffering when it comes to restarting and things like that. But I think they're also kind of conscious of it. But more to the point, they're going to leave this up to the players. I mean, they're not going to try to force anybody to do anything they don't want to do. But they're hoping, I think, that if players feel like they're at risk or that they could be in a bad situation, that they're going to be able to step up and say, I'll take a pass until next year. But again, I think that's also asking a lot of athletes that aren't necessarily always forthcoming with their medical conditions and just want to get back on the ice and win a championship.
Certainly feels like there's a lot of hurdles to jump over. Greg Wyshynski with us here, 98.7 ESPN from ESPN.com, covers hockey. Let me ask about you. I mean, are there going to be media members allowed into either Edmonton or Toronto? And if so, are you willing to do that? Is that something you'd want to do?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely want to. I think this is a story that, you know, we'll be telling our grandkids about, the fact that this all happened and getting in there and seeing how it all plays out. You know, so the media, everybody that's around these bubbles is going to be tested every single day, whether it's hotel workers or food vendors or what have you. tests for COVID every day, temperature checks, symptom checks every day. The media will just get temperature and symptom checks. We don't have to get tested every day for COVID because we're not really interacting with the players. From what I gather, it's going to be a virtual playoff for the media. I mean, you're going to have media that aren't going to be able to afford to go there for as long as the tournament goes for, or maybe they just choose not to want to go there for any number of reasons. It's going to be a lot of Zoom calls, video press conferences, things like that, interaction with the players after games that don't require us to be in the same room. Now, from what I gather, if you're in these arenas, you're going to be able to watch in the press box. You're going to have some access and some perks that people away from the hubs won't have. There'll be some value in being there. But for me personally, like, there's two things. One, I want to know what's going on in the community. I want to know what it's like for Edmonton and Toronto to have, you know, hockey players in this bubble trying not to interact with the public while the public obviously only wants to interact with them while they're there. It's like having, you know, 2.5 months of an all-star game there, right? And the other thing I'm really curious about is how the NHL handles positive test numbers. There's been a huge controversy in recent weeks about naming guys that tested positive and whether it's just, you know, gossip or whether there's a journalistic purpose for it. I think that conversation really changes when you're inside of this safe zone, guys test positive, and now they're missing for 2 weeks from their team, you know, in a 5-game series or what have you. And the NHL is trying to prove to the public and prove to everybody that they've secured these guys and kept them safe. If they're kind of being funny with the numbers or concealing positive tests under the auspices of medical privacy, I think you get into a really weird gray area of how much should we know about how secure this bubble is versus how much they're working to try to keep the players protected from having positive tests leaked to the press.
Yeah, that'd be interesting to find out. I would imagine that all the players would know, right? Because the PA would know. They'd have to let all the players know.
Oh yeah,
with contract tracing.
Everyone's gonna know. I mean, that's part of, you know, like, to pull back the layers of the onion here. I mean, everyone's gonna know when these guys all of a sudden go missing for 2 weeks, right? Like, you're better off. Don't hit us with the upper body injury if the guy tests positive, because we're gonna all know anyway, right? And it's all gonna come out anyway. And you can get away with not having to identify these guys now. I do think that there is an issue of medical privacy now, because if they test positive, there's absolutely no impact on their team, travel, what have you right now. But once you get inside that bubble and guys test positive, I mean, like, you know, your top line center misses an entire series because he tested positive for COVID in a place where he shouldn't be testing positive for COVID. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's got to be something you're forthcoming with. But in the document, the NHL has said that absent their approval, the PA, the teams, whoever, aren't going to be tasked with revealing the names of people that get that test positive. And we'll see how that plays out. I don't think that's a real tenable solution, but we'll see how it plays out.
All right, Greg, last one from me. I'm not sure if you can answer this or not. I've heard some speculation. It sounds like, you know, fingers crossed we get through this, we award the Stanley Cup, that free agency will start beginning of November. And then from that point on, when do you expect next season to potentially start?
Yeah, November 1st is sort of the target date that we've heard as far as when free agency might start. The NHL has been pretty adamant that they think you can get in all of the business of the offseason in hockey done in a month. That might be a little bit adventurous. Mm-hmm. You might need about a month and a half, but that's kind of what they're looking at right now. Because the restart of the following season, of the 2020-2021 season, back in NHL team arenas, potentially with fans back in the building, it's either going to be late December, or Gary Bettman, the commissioner, has floated the idea of restarting the season on January 1st with the Winter Classic, which would be a heck of a kickoff with the Winter Classic in Minnesota. The one thing to keep in mind, though, and this is the crazy part, they are looking to play 82 games next year. And if they start in January, that's a heck of a time crunch and probably another summertime Stanley Cup final sometime in July if you kind of space out the calendar. So their big thing is playing 82 next season, but they think, you know, free agency around November 1st and then restart of next season late December, early January, and we'll see how what kind of schedule they come out to fit all those games in.
Greg, how will the financial impact of COVID-19 determine how teams around the league manage their rosters, and in particular a team like the New York Rangers in dealing with Henrik Lundqvist and that contract, which they're on the hook for another season after this one?
Yeah, there's a couple ways to answer that. I mean, first off, all these teams are obviously taking a massive financial hit with the season getting paused, with the restart of the season happening in buildings with no fans. You don't get really any kind of tangible playoff revenue from concessions and parking and all that stuff. So the bottom lines for a lot of these teams are going to be severely impacted. But the ratification of the CBA, if and when it happens, from the NHL Players Association in the next week and a half, it kicks into effect next season. And so what you have is an $81.5 million salary cap next season, potentially the season after that. So you don't have the growth of the salary cap that we've had in previous seasons. So that, to me, is going to be the biggest impact, is not only money on hand, not only, you know, tightening your belt a little bit on some stuff, but you're going to have a situation where the salary cap ceiling isn't going to grow. If you've been planning out financially, like a team, let's say like Toronto has done, to sign guys and fit guys under an ever-escalating cap, it's going to be flat next year. It could be flat two straight seasons, and that's going to severely impact what teams decide to do, not only with guys that have contracts coming up, but also for big-name free agents like, for example, Taylor Hall this summer, or this November, I guess it is, that are looking to break the bank and might find themselves not having a lot of teams at their beck and call to give them those huge contracts.
All right, Greg, listen, we appreciate it. Hopefully we get some more good news from hockey and this thing starts up sooner rather than later, and we'll talk to you along the way.
Looking good. Thanks, boys.
All right, good stuff. That is Greg Wyshynski. Rick, I got to tell you, of all the major sports, and it's not even close for me right now, have the most confidence in the NHL.
Yeah, I would say NHL, and then a close second would be the NBA. I mean, with how things have, I mean, kind of played themselves out. It seems like they have a good working relationship right now with the union and in the NHL to try to extend the CBA. And then as far as the protocols are concerned, once they get into these hub cities with the amount of testing, yeah, I mean, this is – if one of these leagues is going to have success, it feels like the NHL will be the one.
Yeah, I think so. Chris, you feel like that as well, that the NHL is trending in the right direction?
Yeah, I have the most confidence in hockey's plan, mm-hmm. and it's just listening to the medical experts say that, yeah, out of all the major team sports, that hockey probably stands the best chance to being able to start and finish their season. I just feel like with everything that they've put in place and the league and the PA being so collaborative, I just feel like they're making sure that they've got all the details of this restart covered. And to me, that just, when you're as transparent as they have been and they've taken as much time as they have in trying to go through this process, I just feel more confident in them being able to execute their plan.
And I would imagine, you know, the players and the ones that I've talked to, they feel, I mean, as comfortable as you could feel under these circumstances.
Right.
That once they get into, you know, these situations, it's not going to be easy. I mean, the self-isolation and everything else, not being around your families. But, I mean, it's when you look at the finances of what missing the season would mean, you got to try.
Yeah, it's devastating.
It's devastating.
Yep.
But I think both sides recognize that, though, Rick, which is why they realize they've got to work together. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just like there is no posturing between the two sides. It's like, okay, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to handle negotiating all the health and safety protocols. And, oh, by the way, we're going to work out the CBA just so we have some certainty in terms of the economics of the sport moving forward.
Yeah, everything that they needed to do to give themselves the best opportunity to have success, it feels like they've done up to this point.
Yes.
It does.
Yes.
They've done a really good job. All right, we want to remind you can listen to us anywhere. Click Listen Live at ESPNNewYork.com. Find 98.7 ESPN on the ESPN app or the TuneIn app. Or simply tell your smart speaker, play 98.7 ESPN and 98.7 ESPN New York. We go where you go. We'll do CMT in a moment. Rick, I'm going to give you many guesses to where Jeff McNeil is playing during the Mets sim game right now.
Many guesses.
I'll give you three.
Three guesses.
Yeah.
Mets sim game. It's going to be a weird position. He's already played in the outfield. Second base would be a no-brainer. Third base would be a no-brainer. Jeff McNeil is playing first base currently.
Nope.
He's playing center field.
Nope.
I have no idea.
He's lined up at shortstop at the moment.
No, he's not. Come on.
I'm not kidding.
Are you serious?
Yeah, this comes from Tim Healy's Twitter. Jeff McNeil at shortstop. And Dom Smith?
Left field.
Nope.
Right field.
Nope.
Center field.
Yep.
Stop.
Dom Smith locked away where nothing bad can happen in center field.
Oh, wow.
Why would you do just like what? Why not put Luke Voit in center field? Like what are you doing?
Let's tighten it up. Let's just forget that whole. You know, up the middle has to be strong defensively. Throw that out the window.
McNeil, right? Ramos, McNeil, Smith. It gets no better than that.
Outside of the box thinking, Dave. Outside of the box thinking.
We'll put Lowry in his baby. Put Jed Lowry in his you know, Forrest Gump brace at second.
Well, you might just put the brace at second base. Just have the brace play second base.
Position versatility, Dave. Position versatility.
That's right. I mean, honestly, I think the brace could be better in center field than Dom Smith. I think that's fair to say.
I mean, what are we doing? Is he joking?
I guess he could be. I don't know why he would joke about that. I mean, he's a beat reporter for the Mets.
Yeah, but Dom Smith couldn't play left field right. You could put him in center field?
Listen, I'm just reading the tweet. I don't know. I just
giving a player reps at a position doesn't mean he's going to be able to play that position.
But why would you even do that? It's like saying, all right, Chris Canty, line up a
wide receiver.
We're
going to give you quarterback reps. Yeah, just give you quarterback reps during training camp.
Why? You're never going to play that position.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't understand the point. All right, regardless of that, I do know that CMT is coming up. Rick, is there something big, like a big Monday blast off to start the week for CMT?
I may just call it quits for the day after that.
Stop it.
I mean, what are we doing?
Oh,
why?
My God. I shouldn't tell you. I can't tell you these things.
I can understand. Listen, I can understand McNeil at shortstop. God forbid. I mean, with everything going on, he needs to play shortstop.
Jeff
at one
McNeil
point.
Can't play shortstop.
He can play shortstop a whole hell of a lot better than I think Dom Smith can play center field. You got guys that play the outfield that can't play a good center field.
Yeah, center field's tough.
Dom Smith. Oh,
on the heels of an outstanding CMT on Friday. Thursday, I guess it was. 3 days off, and now we're back at it. Rick, the floor is yours.
All right, here we go, boys. After the long weekend, Monday edition of Cuddle, Marry, Trash.
Nice.
I like to keep it topical. You know this. So on Thursday, we did what I thought was very, very topical CMT. So I wanted to follow it up with something strong.
What was Thursday? It was fast food?
It was fast food.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, a lot of controversy, which is good for CMT. So what I'm doing today is in honor of SpongeBob Golf Pants, Bryson DeChambeau, who clearly
don't make it a golf one again, please.
No.
Okay.
Clearly hasn't skipped head day. Guy's a freak. I'm not sure if you watched any of this. You probably didn't. Average off the tee was 350 yards.
Yeah, I saw the highlights, so I did see a little bit.
18th hole. He's like, you know what? I'm going to pull up the driver. Yeah, 367. No big deal. So I'm doing freakish athletes.
Oh, nice.
All
I like
sports,
that.
Freakish athletes.
Will Andre the Giant be here?
Andre the Giant will not be in this. I don't have enough time.
Okay.
I got a whole list. I'm going to try to get through as many as humanly possible.
Freakish athlete. Right. Manute Bol, will he be here?
He will not. He will not. He's just a freak. I wouldn't say athlete. Freak. Okay. I'm going to start with Chris's favorite team because they got some freaks. The New York Yankees. I'm going to give you Aaron Judge, specimen, freak. Giancarlo Stanton, physical specimen, freak. Aroldis Chapman. Judge, Stanton, Chapman.
Mm.
Okay, since we're starting with my team, I feel like I should do the honors of leading us off. And so I am going to start, and this might surprise you a little bit, but I'm going to roll with marrying the Cuban Missile Crisis.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
Aroldis Chapman. Like, just watching somebody throw a baseball 105 miles an hour, I mean, that's just, I mean, I don't have words to describe it, Dave. It's unbelievable.
And plus, he's got the fancy new Jeep, which you guys can roll around in this six-wheel Jeep.
Safe.
I saw the Kevlar covered Jeep. Yeah.
Very safe.
Yeah. I mean, you can't hit his fastball unless you're the Houston Astros and you've got a buzzer system going on. So, yeah, I'm going to marry Chapman. I am going to cuddle Aaron Judge.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
I mean, the guy is, what, 6'7", 280 pounds? I mean, he should be a defensive end. I mean, he's playing right field. And, you know, in terms of him being a freak athlete and actually using his physical gifts to make him a better player, I mean, there's nobody that does it better in baseball than Aaron Judge. And then I don't want to do this, but I'm going to trash Stanton. I just think of the three guys that are on this list, he's clearly the one that most Yankees fans would be able to do without. So I would trash Stanton.
All right. I like your list. I had my trio, and then you almost swayed me to marry Chapman. I'm not going to, but you made very, very salient points, Chris. Hmm. But I'm still going to marry Judge.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry him.
He's just enormous. And you know, the truth is, there's nothing he doesn't do well. So I will marry Judge. I will cuddle Chapman.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
He's just, you talk about that left arm. It's just, it's unbelievable. And his stuff is filthy and terrifying. And, you know, part of this for me is that I have to look at the production of the player. And I'm sorry, Stanton just isn't at the level of those other two. So I will trash Giancarlo Stanton.
Wow. Aggressive. All right, here we go. I am going to give you now.
Where would you have gone there?
I would have probably, freakish athlete, I probably would have married Judge, cuddled Chapman. Probably safer to just cuddle Chapman, and then I would have trashed Stanton.
All right, so you agree with me.
You're a bad guy. You're a bad guy.
All right, I'm going to give you an NFL.
Thought we moved on from that.
I'm going to give you, ready for this? Old school NFL. Old school multi-sport. NFL. Multi-sport. Bo Jackson.
Yeah, you're going Deion, yep.
Deion. Herschel Walker. Now, that's a list of freaks right there, boys.
Yeah, it is. All right. I mean, I think maybe the most freakish athlete, you might have someone that comes into play that I'm not thinking of, but I think the most freakish athlete I've ever seen is Bo Jackson.
Yes.
So that's easy for me. I will marry Bo.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
Deion was unbelievable and was really a terrific player in two separate sports. I'll cuddle Deion.
Bombs and relations.
Is Deion one of the – where would you rank Deion as the swaggiest athlete of all time? He's
going to
be at the top of the list.
He's right up there.
Top of the list, yeah.
Remember he played for the Yankees? Remember did you watch the show on him when he played for the Yankees and he put the money symbol in the –
Yeah, and Carlton Fisk attacked him. I didn't see the show, but I remember it. I remember Carlton Fisk was livid about it. Didn't they fight right at home plate?
I think so, yeah. Oh, that's too funny.
And then I will – now, when you say multi-sport, am I considering bobsled as the second sport? For
yeah. Yes.
See, that sport doesn't move the needle for me. So this is easy. Herschel Walker, goodbye.
Yeah, you pretend like bobsled is the hot dog eating contest. I mean,
it's not baseball, football. So it's football bobsled, which pales in comparison to Bo and Deion. Final answer, I feel comfortable with.
So what? I mean, now would the luge too? That's out the window.
Yeah, if you're going to give me a great baseball player / luge player, and then I could have baseball, football. Yes, that would pale in comparison.
The luge. What do you think? What do you think, Chris?
Ricky, we don't have to spend a whole lot of time on this category because I agree with Dave across the board.
All right. Well done, boys.
By the way, Dinahan very upset.
Why?
He says he feels Brian Jordan was disrespected in this category.
Yeah, Brian Jordan was good, but I mean, Herschel Walker is considered one of the greatest athletes. I mean, he's a freak athlete.
Could you even tell me what he did in the bobsled?
Yeah, he pushed it.
He pushed it.
Yeah, they used him in he's the one that's going to, he gets you started, and then he jumps in. Hmm. He's the back. Okay. Of the four-man bobsled, which is important.
I would think so. How'd they do? Did they win gold?
I don't know. I didn't
You
go
don't even know.
No, I don't think they won gold.
You don't even know.
I know it's a sport.
I never said it wasn't a sport.
No, you spit on it. You disrespect it.
Okay, so in 3 months from right now, I say to you, what are you going to sit down and watch today? You going to watch football or baseball or bobsledding? Where does bobsled fall in order there?
Probably second. All right, here we go. Old school, not that old. I love this category, though. I'm going to give you some wide receivers. Mm. I'm going to give you Megatron, Calvin Johnson. I'm going to give you Randy Moss and T.O.
Wow.
Yeah, wow.
Oh.
That's legit.
Wow.
You start, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, you guys know T.O. is one of my former teammates. So, I mean, he's not going to get trashed on this list. So, what I'm going to do is I'm going to marry Randy Moss.
If it was socially acceptable,
you're
going to
trash Calvin Johnson.
I'm going to marry Randy Moss.
Wow.
I mean, listen, we have a verb after the man's last name on how you dunk on defensive backs. It's called being mossed. So, I mean, you have to absolutely marry Moss when you have a freak show receiver category. I am going to – cuddled Terrell Owens.
Bombs and fallacious seats.
Guy had a broken leg, came back, and was ready for the Super Bowl and balled out in that game. He wasn't the reason why they lost to the New England Patriots. I mean, I believe that, but that's also according to his own words. And then I am going to respectfully discard Calvin Johnson.
Garbage. Fucking discard.
Poor Megatron.
All right. Moss is the guy. I mean, he's just a freakish athlete. Have you ever seen the 30 for 30 on him in college? I mean, he did things that we've never seen done before. So you got to marry Randy Moss. I think Chris is correct.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
And then I think the masses will hear me now and say it's Rothenberg. He just has no respect for Terrell Owens. He's going to trash him. But there's something about the longevity of Terrell Owens, and there's something about the fact that the guy returned to the Super Bowl after a broken leg and was incredible in that game. I will cuddle T.O.
Bombs and fallacious seeds.
And not for lack of thinking that Calvin Johnson's a great player, but just in this trio, I think he's third of three, and I will trash Calvin Johnson.
Look at this garbage.
Guys are unbelievable. All right, next one up. Michael Vick, Lamar Jackson,
oh boy.
Cameron, I'm sick of being humble Newton.
All right. Okay. All right, I'm going to marry Michael Vick.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
I mean, he did things at the quarterback position we've never seen done before, and he did it for a long time.
I mean, he did have the Michael Vick experience. Remember that commercial?
That was awesome.
Awesome.
That was awesome.
So I will marry him, and I think, and I don't mean to put pressure on you, Chris, I that feels kind of like a no-brainer to me. Wow. All right, I haven't seen enough of Lamar Jackson. He's an unbelievable athlete, but he's only done it for 2 years. He is sensational. But for that reason, needing to see more, I'm going to cuddle Cam Newton.
Bombs and fallacious seeds.
And I'm going to trash Lamar.
Very interesting, Dave Rothenberg. I mean, he's only done it for 2 years, but he's got an MVP in one of those seasons.
He certainly does.
So, I mean, what is that?
Listen, if you went Vic Jackson Newton, I wouldn't think you've done anything wrong.
Yeah, but I feel like that's continuing to be disrespectful to Cam, and I don't know that I want to be on his hit list as we continue to move toward the regular season. So I am going to marry Michael Vick.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
I saw him up close and personal when I was at Virginia. I am going to cuddle one Cameron Newton.
Bombs and fallacious seeds.
And I am going to, again, politely discard Lamar Jackson. So I'm agreeing with Dave Rothenberg across the board on that category. Very tough one, though, Rick. Very tough.
That was a tough one. I will say this, though, too. By keeping Cam, you also get Fig, which is nice. Everyone loves the Fig Newton. Delicious cookie. All right, now this is undersized freak athletes. At their size, they shouldn't really be this good, but they are. I'm going to give you Chris's favorite, Jose Altuve.
Oh, yeah.
Kyler Murray. In the angry little ball of hate himself, Brad Marchand for the Boston Bruins. Feisty little nugget. Definition of feisty nugget. Mean little feisty nugget.
Chris, I believe you're up here.
Okay, this is easy for me. I am going to marry Kyler Murray.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
I am going to cuddle Brad Marchand.
Bombs and...
And I'm going to trash Jose Altuve, and I don't think we need any further explanation as to why I'm trashing Altuve.
He went from, like, the most... Like, people loved Jose Altuve before this whole thing happened.
Us included.
Everyone loved him.
You say loved. I still really appreciate Jose Altuve. So
no, you can appreciate and love. They're two different things. I mean, you can respect someone and not like them.
No, I like
he was
him.
Like beloved.
I don't respect him anymore.
Well, you shouldn't. You're a Yankees fan. All right. I mean, Kyler Murray is easy there, right? I mean, he's a two-sport athlete. He's an incredible athlete. So to marry of those three, that's an easy one.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
I'll cuddle Jose Altuve.
Bombs and fallacious
seeds. Because he's your... hated one, but for me, Marchand is my hated one. I can't stand him, so I will. I'll kiss him on the nose and put him into the garbage. I want any part of him.
Lick his face. Yeah, he is good, though, man. He is good.
He is good, but he's annoying.
All right, here we go. Guy's actually, I mean, he's called the freak. I'm going to give you Giannis.
Oh, yeah.
The Greek freak. Zion, LeBron.
Oh, my goodness. All right. I have to go LeBron. I understand there's a Greek freak participant in this, but it's LeBron James. He's been doing this for, what, 17 years at this level? He's unbelievable.
He's the freak. He's just a freak.
So I will marry LeBron.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
I will cuddle Giannis.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
And I feel comfortable about this. Zion, freakish athlete, yes. At the level of those other two, no. I will trash Zion.
Wow. Very, very interesting choice, Dave. I am going to also marry LeBron James.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
But I'm going to cuddle Zion Williamson.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
I just am, Dave. I look at the career trajectory for this kid, and he's got the ability to be really, really special. I mean, this guy is going to be an MVP at some point throughout his NBA career if he can stay healthy. And from the looks of things and how he's handled this layoff and the shape that he's come back in, I just feel like we're going to see a different guy than we saw in the NBA regular season. So I'm going to cuddle Zion Williamson, and I'm going to trash Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Wow. His name has freak in it.
Yeah, he's the Greek freak. Yeah.
I understand that, Dave, but I don't know, man.
Okay. That's fine.
No, I just feel like Zion is the potential could be on another level.
I like it. Listen, I like the controversy back and forth. I like it. All right, last one. Here we go. This is just the dominant category. This is like the definition, the epitome of domination. I'm going to give you Serena Williams. Mm. I'm going to give you Usain Bolt. Michael Phelps.
Wow.
Whew. Okay. This is on me. I am going to marry Serena.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
I'm not sure if we've had any athlete dominate their sport like Serena Williams has dominated women's tennis. I'm going to marry her. I'm going to cuddle Michael Phelps.
Bombs.
I mean,
and
the most decorated Olympian in the history of the Summer Games. So I'm going to marry him. Cuddle him. And I am going to, again, politely discard Usain Bolt.
Look at this garbage.
I know that the game show intensifies when Chris and I disagree, but I will not disagree solely for the sake of disagreeing. I agree across the board. I'm gonna marry Serena.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
I'm gonna cuddle Michael
Bombs
Phelps
and hellacious seeds.
And Usain Bolt will be kicked to the curb.
Look at this garbage.
Finally,
it's tough to actually find a good category to put Serena to put Serena in because she's so dominant.
At another level. I mean, she had a baby and came back and was a great player.
She won the Australian. Dave, she won the Australian Open pregnant.
Right. I mean, she does things that we've never seen before, and she's done it. I mean, she checks all the boxes, right? She's done it forever. She never tired. She did it pregnant. She did it post-pregnancy. She's done it at small events. She's done it at majors. She's just, I mean, there's nothing she hasn't done.
I mean, Dave, I don't want to be hyperbolic, but like, has there ever been an athlete that's been as dominant as she is in her sport?
Over a long
period of time like this?
Yeah, yeah.
Gretzky,
maybe? I mean,
yeah, maybe. Maybe.
That have dominated their sport the way she's done it?
I mean, it's hard because she's solo in other sports that we look at are team sports, but certainly she's in this.
I think Tiger at one point was this dominant. But the fact
but
that
for
she's
this long? There,
she's, no, not for this. No. No,
you know who dominated long. This level? Herschel Walker in the bobsled. I think that's probably be the answer there.
All right, there you go, boys. That is a Monday edition of CMT.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.